Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the After Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hello.
Brian Brushwood.
Yeah.
So right before the show, Justin started off a discussion that we said, hold it. Let's put this on After Things. Justin, what did you say?
So, you know, and one of the things that I think – you know, we can, I don't think anybody on this podcast will ever say that we are experts on anything, but we can be experts.
We are experts on everything.
Okay. Well, doggone it. But I do think we are experts in trying things, and we are always a defender of the just go out and do it, as Shia LaBeouf will yell at you in a viral video this week. You know, just seize the moment and take your life.
Is that a reference I missed? Did he?
No, yeah, there was this viral video of Shia LaBeouf giving you a motivational pep talk where he's just being very intense. Shia LaBeouf giving like just seize it. The reason why yesterday you said tomorrow, which means today's the day. Like, you know, just a lot of it's. I'll tell you what, I really don't know what to think of that Shia, but he sure is a fun patch in the quilt work of modern pop culture. Anyhow, so I had an idea with John Teasdale, who you might know on the Night Attack show as the Night Attack Knight.
Right.
He works with me at the Go Game, and a while ago did a funny little card game called Who Does Nobody Like? And we had this idea to do another card game and eventually partner with some friends of ours. And it's been very, very cool. You know, it's been a really cool process, and we are very happy with where it is. It is a political debate themed game. Probably could be best summed up as if Cards Against Humanity was a political debate. It is not the same mechanics, but similar in kind of some of the you're going to laugh because somebody is putting down cards that might be contrary to their personality or reflect their personality, and everyone's going to laugh, and it's going to be a fun time. Kind of like Legos for improv, where you can plug together things and make funny jokes. But we're doing a Kickstarter. It's going to launch in early August, and I have been tasked, because it is probably my only, beyond the ideas of the game and the writing of the cards, probably my only worth to the actual like business element of this is like, well, Justin, like everyone's like, oh, okay, so well, who's going to handle the taxes? Oh, somebody who actually knows and likes those things. Who's going to handle all the expenses? Oh, somebody who's good with money and numbers and counting. It's like, Justin, what are you going to do? Like,
Twitter. Yeah, I could do Twitter.
Get the word out. I could shout loudly that people should buy it.
Exactly. So it's kind of left me now in trying to in a situation where I got a product that I know people are going to like, that I think will be successful. What from from here? How do we have the best campaign to roll out for this Kickstarter, and specifically mailing list wise? Like, is a mailing list still the number one thing that we need to work hard to build? Should I be talking to people about trying to make a deal to leverage their mailing lists? Should I be putting my effort into retaining people on social media? You know, is Facebook the place to go, even though I'm not necessarily, I don't have the biggest presence on Facebook, but that's definitely where people talk about politics the most. Is it Twitter, where I'm most comfortable, yet might not be the stickiest, people are going to see it all day kind of situation? So that's really where I'm at, and I would like to throw it out here to the After Things crew to kind of talk about, in general, retention and getting the news out, as the Ad Dragon would say.
Man, I'll tell you what. I don't think I'm right to say this, but my gut says that Facebook is doing so well selling access to people who have indicated that they like your thing, that I think Facebook's whole angle is just focused on big players with big budgets who are doing big ad buys. And I don't think Facebook is a really good place for a small business unless it's a single person and you actually friend them, right? Because the problem with Facebook is if someone has friended me, Brian Brushwood, the person, then, you know, when I post something, it shows up in their timeline. Like right now, I think there are 3,000 friends I have on Facebook. There are 28,000 people who have liked Brian Brushwood, the brand. Brian Brushwood, the brand, posts something, and all of a sudden, you cross fingers and you hope enough people like it that they bother to show it to anyone. So out of the 28,000 people who have liked Brian Brushwood, the brand, oftentimes as few as 700 people will ever see anything I post on there. Because what will happen is it'll be like, I think it's a funny thing or an interesting whatever, and I'll post it on there. And it won't send it out to everyone. It'll send it out to, we'll say, 5%. And then of those, if enough of them indicate, they have to actively like it for them to kind of open it up to more and more and more. And then what they'll do is they'll come back and say, you know, hey, buddy, you know, only 800 people saw your post. You want all 28,000 who've indicated they like you? Why don't you throw us a little scratch? And then they get all fussy about like, well, this is a photo of some text and we don't allow that and whatever.
I am right in the middle of that with trying to give away Fire in the Sky, my Angel Killer mini sequel that goes in between there. And like, do you want to boost this post? And like, oh, yeah, no, 20,000 people follow you. And that was my problem with, and I think the answer is everything, but then you have to decide where do you go first and then second and third. My problem with Facebook was, you know, you and again, they're free to change whatever they want. You know, like Darth Vader on friggin' Cloud City, you know, just
they can alter the deal. That's fine.
Yeah. So you start off with Facebook like, oh, yeah, I'll send people here, like my Facebook page. Like, this is great. It's a great way to reach people. Fantastic. I got thousands of people. Great. I want them to see this. Oh, no, we're not going to show it to them. What? No, you got to pay us to complete this agreement that you have. Now, that I did not know when I started pushing people towards Facebook that would be the way that it would work.
Dude,
I did not
know
that.
It's even worse than that because I originally did everything as my personal name. I was like, I'll friend you on Facebook. And I hit the max of 5,000. And they said, if you want to go beyond here, there was a brief time. They were like, don't worry, for free, we'll flip your private profile over to a public one. And yeah. I was like, oh, and then I could go beyond 5,000. They're like, yeah, you sure can. I was like, okay, let's do that. And so I did that and then ended up deeply, deeply regretting it.
Me too.
Because
me
what's
too.
Funny is here's the perverse thing is the more people who like your page on Facebook, the harder it is to get the word out. Because as a percentage, fewer and fewer people are engaged. You do not want casual interest on your stuff on Facebook. You want a very small, very passionate group that will absolutely like every single thing you do.
I still do it, and like my publisher really pushes me towards Facebook and all that because, you know, like every, you know, there are, you know, the problem is like companies and stuff love metrics that they can go and show their bosses.
Yep.
And not necessarily not results. They love metrics, not results. And that's what's frustrating to me. And so I having to please people by, yes, I will go do this. I'll go do this thing, although there are better ways to do it. I think primary, it's email. Email's beautiful because email is, I get it. Oh, I like this. I'm going to save this. I'm going to respond to this later on. I get emails, marketing emails all the time for magic stuff that I should delete. They write a good hook. I'm reading it. I'm reading about this trick. I want to see it. Brian Brushwood's telling me I can, you know, put some sort of lockpick around my nuts.
Yep.
Tell me more.
Okay. And I feel like we're sort of tipping the ending of this because I agree with you. I think that the email list is the best place. But before we get to why email is so great, let's maybe dissect some of the other alternatives. Twitter, I think, Justin, you made a really good point in that Twitter is ephemera. It's so easy to get lost in the crowd in there. And unless you want to be that guy who's continuously hammering on the same thing over and over again, that's a hard place to be. Although you can do it. If you have a big release coming up, you can release 10 different posts each per day, each one independently interesting, each one also underscoring the fact that this is your big project that you're working on leading up to some big release day. But you have to realize that, you know, that it's ephemera, man. That stuff evaporates into the wind.
Well, I kind of find Twitter's best use to be like with a minute on either side of it, right? Like, you know, if you're reacting to something within a minute and you want someone to do something within a minute, it's best in the business, right? Like, you, it's a great way if somebody's like, so let's take this Kickstarter that we're doing. If somebody asks a question about the Kickstarter, wants to know more information about it, wants to know when it's going to be released, what they're going to get, they have another, you know, clarifying, you know, question, then I think it's great to turn them into a backer within the next minute after you respond to them,
right?
Right. It's great if you are about to pass a goal, and so now you can offer to people that are following you, hey, we're in the trench and we're about to fire those, you know, fire into the exhaust port. Can you please help us get over the hump and blow up the Death Star? Because that is very exciting ephemera, right? That's like, I can be a part. I'm here. I'm already at the party where they're going to drop the ball. That's fantastic. I want to be a part of it. But we've all been there, and we could probably, when I say this, we'll immediately think of some names that I know we've all texted each other and rolled our eyes about. Overhype project Twitter guy, you know, like it's hard. I feel bad sometimes.
We're looking at you, Barack Obama. Yeah.
I feel bad because I get too over enthusiastic about my friends' projects, because I will always retweet my friends' stuff just because I'm at my heart a soccer mom and I just want to see my friend score a goal.
You know, in like anything, like my problem is like I don't like right now I should be planning my campaign for Name of the Devil and what I'm gonna, my publishers have a whole, you know, blog tour thing and all that stuff planned, and I got a couple appearances, but I should be doing more. I'm in the middle of a book I want to finish, and once I finish it, I've been telling myself, okay, then I will plan my campaign, because part of the problem is it all ends up being last minute. Finally, you finish the thing, and now you want to tell people things, but you really need to think out. Like, there's ways to use Twitter and tell people. You just don't put the same tweet every time. Hey, yes. Check out this. You know, well, here's the cover.
And don't even have the same intent every single time. You know, it's like you can't just write 10 versions of the same tweet and expect it to make people feel like it's fresh content. You know, instead, you know, create a campaign. Here's the thing: is Twitter is everybody needs to remember, in all of your marketing and business interactions on Twitter, Twitter is a live chat room. It would not make sense right now in the Diamond Club chat to say the same thing every 10 minutes exactly, or to even make the same point. What does make sense is to have a back and forth conversation where it's like, hey, guys, I got a crazy idea for a game. I'm taking your suggestions for the next 10 minutes. Whatever you suggest, I'm going to integrate into my next thing. And then people do, and there's back and forth, and there's talking, and it's like, and I've selected a winner. I'll be back in 10 minutes, and we'll play another game. That is what Twitter excels at, does very, very well, right?
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's interesting to see where attention spans are and whatnot. The answer is everything, but I would say, yeah, Justin, the short answer is primary is email, because it's...
No, okay, wait, hold on. There are other vectors, too. And again, I agree, email, but why not a series of YouTube announcements, or in what situation?
Primary. I didn't say exclusionary. I said primary. Start from there and then radiate outwards from there. I think yes, certainly. I would say, though, for the amount of effort, if you're super – and also depends who your audience is. Like, I don't have – you know, I'm not a YouTuber. I don't have a big YouTube. I can put up a YouTube video and I might get 500 or 600 views, yeah. You know. And the amount of effort that goes into that versus if I do a really, really well-planned email, I'll get 10,000, you know, people – perspective, you know, it depends on who you're engaging with.
Well, and furthermore, I do believe that you have to understand where your strengths are, not only as a creator, but also as what you connect with people on, and where, if you have an existing audience, where they live, you know, like I can't just walk into YouTube and pretend that I'm a YouTube guy. Now, I could try to go to other YouTube people that I know and try to figure out a way that I can collaborate with them to co-op their audiences. But to just think like, all right, well, this is a big bustling marketplace where a lot of people are, like, it's a lot of long hallways that, and not a whole lot of open foyers on YouTube. You know, like, there's a lot of people that get into their own thing, but it's not exactly a fantastic discovery platform for kind of short term, this is a project and we need to get moving on it kind of project.
Well, and keep in mind that there are different flavors of experiences available on all different environments. There are people on Facebook who never, ever will follow you on Twitter because they don't understand or like the Twitter environment. There are people on YouTube who will never, ever follow your Facebook. They will never sign up for an email or whatever. However, there's some number of them that will. And the more diversified you could get, like, hey, do you like me enough here on YouTube that you would like to get an email once a week? Then why don't you join my clubhouse? This is the reason you see the heavy-handed, you know, join my secret newsletter to get the 5 tips in order to lift like a pro. Like, the reason...
Type it away right now, Brian.
As painful as that is, the reason people keep coming back to that is because it works and because it's necessary, because now it's sort of like a RAID array with hard drives where it's like you can lose an account or you can lose somebody who loves you on Facebook can fall off of Facebook and, you know, migrate to Twitter. And if you've locked them in on more than one platform, you still have the ability to reach them. If they love both of them, now you could reach them twice, right? Which is part of the reason I still post a bunch of stuff on my Google Plus page. And I, you know, because I want to hit people, especially if it's something about to be released, you want to hit them in multiple ways.
You got like a million Google Plus followers too.
Yes. No. Well, I mean,
Though it looks after IO that Google Plus might be pining for the fjords.
Wait, what does that mean? Pining for the fjords? Is that a common phrase?
You know, it's a X social network. It has ceased to be.
Oh, wait, pining for the fjords? I've never heard that.
It's a Monty Python thing.
Ah, got it.
It's only one of the most like famous sketch comedy.
Mm. I'm not a comedian. I don't do comedy.
Justin, can't you just enjoy the moment? You're smarter than us. Can't you just do that instead of rubbing it in? I'm like,
us,
is
this, so that's is, both of us, right?
We is this a Thor reference? years ago I wrote a book called How to Make an Action Movie for $99, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was based on my experience of knowing nothing about film and saying, hey, why should that stop me? And saying, like, I'm not going to go broke doing this. So, and that was fun. And I thought about revisiting that, but now with a, you know, like How to Build Your Own Empire, talking a lot about the lessons I've learned watching Brian, watching Justin, watching Tom Merritt and other people and all that, and condensing that sort of thing. And I thought, like, what's the first thing I would tell people to do when you want to build your empire? And that is start building your list. Start to build your list. This is every empire does a survey, does a census. They say, what is the size of this? What is our domain? Right now, everybody listening to it who has some interest in sharing something with somebody at some point that you need an audience for, start a list. You know what? It does not need to be 5,000, doesn't need to be 50,000. If you have 5 people, 5 really good friends who will take a bullet for you and will get the word out there, that's great. That's a fantastic start, and that's where you need to start, is to say, this is where I begin. Because the problem is we confuse, you know, you can confuse having hundreds of thousands of Twitter followers for having an army of a couple hundred thousand people. That's just everybody that's ever said, oh, okay. That's not everybody who's in love with you. That's right. Not everybody who is, you know, like, hey, guys, let's meet at midnight with pitchforks. I've got an idea. And that's probably most people listening right now. We would all be into that.
And again, realize, and this is not to you, Justin, because I know you already get this, but for anyone who has a project that they're trying to build up steam to, understand that when you see Louis C.K. announce that his new special is $5 and makes $1 million in 18 hours or whatever, understand it is not the fact that he did not make that money in that 18 hours. He made it in the 20 years of brand value and friendship and trust and diehard passionate fanship that he built up into it. And finally, he opened up a floodgates and said, oh, by the way, did you guys feel like maybe you owed me $5 over all these years? Please, here's where to send it. So as a result, you know, you need to be very careful about how often you push buttons. You know, it's you can't keep hitting the same button without... I don't know. It's you got to
fuel
on the tank.
And Louis C.K. is always such an interesting example when it comes to this kind of stuff, because he, like a lot of game changing examples, he is typical and not typical all at once, right? And ultimately, as we've seen things play out, the greatest benefit that Louis C.K.'s selling directly to his audience had on stand-up comic specials, right, even just that market, was that it expanded the ability for people to sell their specials to other people, because that special let Netflix know, oh, what, like, people are into non-traditional ways. You don't got to just be on HBO or Showtime anymore. People just like stand-up comedy and they want to get it in other ways. And so it expanded Epics and Netflix and all these other places. And it wasn't necessarily just every comic had to be a direct mail master.
And what it didn't do is his own platform really wasn't able to do much for anybody else. It worked great because of all that equity, as Brian pointed out, but it's that, you know, the right person and the right product is what really works well. And Louis C.K. was like $5 or this or that. And then it's interesting when you see experiments that don't get repeated to, you know, you have Radiohead does an album one way, like, oh, name your price, whatever. And then they didn't do it again because it was that worked right at that point, because there's a lot of conversation about where these things should be, and then these things don't. But
then there's the counterexample of Pebble, where it's like they were the most, you know, one of the biggest Kickstarter success stories in history. So you would think that they would be able to say, hey, version 2 is out at this set price. But instead, they played the Kickstarter game again, and depending on what gossip you hear, you know, it's either working out or not working out for them. But I know that certainly a lot of people, including yours truly, threw the money through the same exact mechanism.
Yeah, I hope it works out for them. The stories behind the scenes are scary.
Yeah, a little bit sketch.
Yeah, but, you know, again, but yeah, exactly. But that was, they went back to their audience. They said, hey, the people who, and it was funny because they were made possible. You know, there were people who had a great product before. They had done a lot of work, and they were not sketchy people doing a really legitimate thing the first time around. And that audience was there. That's, they knew, let's go back to here because that worked out really well there. And, you know, again, start now with just a list of people that you can contact to,
dude,
and say
right
that you have permission to.
I just went to the Pebble page, courtesy of Neshcom's use of the second screen feature at diamondclub.tv/second screen. And they are not looking for your Twitter. They are not looking for your Facebook. They are looking for your email.
Yep.
So let me ask you about email then. If email is king, and I can build, and so now starting today, I can start my email and, for this project specifically, and say, all right, everybody who's interested in this, we set up a splash page with MailChimp widget, and say, all right, everybody, come on in. Everybody, get in here. Past that, I've got everything that I can get by the time that early August comes around. Is it worth it to go to other people for which I know have similar audiences or are in the demo for which would be interested in this, and ask them to either purchase access to or have them send out a thing on their email?
Well, okay. So you made a very good clarification where it's like purchase access to is those are all dirty four-letter words, right? That sounds an awful lot like sell their list to. And if you were to write, you know, let's say iJustine, you know, iJustine says, Justin, I think you're really great. Here's my entire email list. You can write them all an email. Regardless of how big it is, I think it would mean nothing to any of them. You would get virtually no benefit from it. However, if iJustine, you know, did her, next level is iJustine says, hey guys, I know you're fans of me. Here's something I really like by Justin Robert Young. Still not that great.
Yeah.
But if they could come up with a campaign, and this is why nowadays what you buy is you buy influence. You buy people actively participating who actually believe in their stuff. If iJustine says, holy crap, guys, here's the hot new game coming out, and I've been told that I have the chance to name one political figure from history to be a card in this game. Let's play our contest. Who should it be? I think it should be Abraham Lincoln, but maybe it'd be funnier if it was Ron Paul. Or what if it was a werewolf hybrid of Ron Paul and, whatever, Timothy Geithner or whatever. And the relevant.
Ring the bell for the Timothy Geithner reference that we all look forward to every week.
Now all of a sudden you have something, you know, especially if it's like, you know, like, and plus also, you know, whoever sends me the best ideas, you're going to get a free set of them and I'm going to sign them, along with all the creators or whatever. That is something that, number one, because keep in mind, for as much as you're thinking, how do I get the word out? Justine is also thinking, how do I provide valuable content for, you know, my flock, right? How do I keep them excited and feeling like they're up to date into what I'm up to?
I absolutely agree. I think that's the mistake that often's been made, is like, oh, I'll put this out on my list. Like, yeah, like Brian nailed it where, yeah, I you know, if Brian puts out a link for, hey, my buddy Andrew Main did Name of the Devil, and the ones who don't know who I am, like, how do I, what's the scam? How do I use this to get chicks? What happens here? Well, you just read it and the chicks will be interested in it. you know, and that's, it's context, everything. You have to sort of create a desire, create it. Now, what I would say, Justin, is that like you have a lot of people who don't have a huge following, but have an interest in you and like you, and you can certainly think about ways of, you have both. But I'm saying is you have, there's an audience there that if you say, hey, you know, I have a, you know, I have a special, you know, the gold pack or whatever for anybody who shares this, uses this link to buy it and shares this link, you get the gold card or the gold pack or do something like that. Which you create something special for those people. That's first and foremost, is you're creating a special experience for people who want something special, and then you're encouraging them to share.
Oh, no, definitely. And I think like, and that kind of gets more into the into the social element of it, and the direct communication between you know, like me and anybody who would be kind of qualified, that's already sort of in my net, right? What I'm kind of curious about now, if you know, we understand as email is king, you know, like, is, you know, what then what is that game plan? What is that, you know, like, pick your favorite card, or, you know, like, or like, am I identifying other people that are kind of in this thing that would like that, I genuinely think that would like this, that I either have a soft relationship to, or no relationship to, or a good relationship with? Like, what is the mutually beneficial, non-offensive, non-skeezy, like, you know, non-used car salesman, way to go about that?
What value can you create for them? And I think like a value that would be cool is there a way for you to do a hastily sketched, whatever personalized card from you that goes into the pack? You create, make them into a villain or make them into a character or something.
Can I let me do this. I mean, number one, that's absolutely correct. But speaking to Justin's strengths, a week or two ago, I recommended John Acuff's Do Over. And I do not, I think there's maybe two blogs I will check regularly. I'll check Reasons, Hit and Run, and I'll check Cracked regularly. That's the only kind of blogging platform that I really look at. Everything else is like if Reddit directs me over there or whatever. John Acuff, his new book, Do Over, is about, you know, reinventing yourself every few years, you know, not necessarily getting fired or leaving or whatever. I will never check it out. I don't do RSS feeders, and it seems like a lot of other people don't do as well. But I did at some point sign up for his for his email thing. And basically, the guy writes a blog post every, I don't know, maybe it is every day, but I don't always read them. But it's something that is of value in and of itself. Maybe it's just a quote he sends out. So because this guy has a reputation, you know, more days than not, he's sending out content, not a request to action, not a call to action, not a thing he needs you to do. It's just content. Take it or leave it, right? And then one of those days, something will look like content, and I'll get in there, or maybe it'll look like there's an emergency happening, right? And that's the day that you all of a sudden, like a lightning bolt, trigger all that goodwill, all of that that background suddenly becomes something different.
And it's also a great way to get people, like, if he's putting useful, helpful things there, is that you get that and you go, oh, I want to forward that to a friend. I want to share that. And exactly. That's how he builds his list.
Yeah. Well, for example, right now, you know, it's like the wait is over. It's available. And this is one of those harvesting days. He did all this planting with telling stories. And his story is, here are the things I'm discovering or whatever. And your story, likewise, Justin, might be, you know, things I realized trying to create a game, you know, and you say blah, blah, blah. And, you know, you provide value, which is nothing but planting seeds. And there will come a day like this when it'll be a harvesting day. And then you'll be able to say, today is the day. Here's what you can do. You know, buy from these places and be specific and direct in your direction.
Oh, good. He's at Parable.
What's that?
He's at Parable. Good.
What is Parable?
I got a rewards card there.
Oh, do you?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. I was confused.
I don't know what that means.
I think it's a Christian bookstore.
I mean, like, if I were making a joke about a Christian bookstore, I'd probably call it Parable.
Yeah, got it.
No, that's a really, really good idea. And it's certainly, that is, I think, part of the missing piece, I think, for a lot of people, is that oftentimes whenever we kind of get into, and this is kind of a common theme with After Things even, is everybody wants the magic pill. You know, the magic, the the one crazy trick that'll change everything. And ultimately, if we have learned anything in the modern world of doing business and leveraging your personality to do business, is just continuing to put your personality out there, you know, and whether or not your personality is exactly honing it to be what your audience wants is an art in and of itself. But you can't win the game unless you show up, and you can't show up unless you are putting, just even if it's a little something for people to connect to. So, not only do they know more about you, and therefore you can help inform their decision when you have something to come out, but also so they can read into more and more about where they connect with you, which is almost just as important.
Heartily agree. I think I've been having fun with the weird things list that we put out for our Patreon for weird things. And you know, for me, I don't find, if I'm trying to finish a book, I feel guilty if I'm writing anything other than the book. But when I find some interesting little article, sometimes it's two or three a day and it's quick. It's just one sentence sort of thing. It's like, hey, here's something cool. Here's a little thought on it, whatever. And I'll probably do something like that for my own purposes at some point, maybe more in the writing creative sort of space. Cause I said, all right, I can just say, hey, here's something cool to look at, whatever. And I have some neat exchanges with the people who've been reading those. Not everything has to be a 1,000-word essay, not everything. It can just be, here's something interesting, and it just to develop it. You are what you do. What I want to talk about is, there's a documentary on HBO called Banksy Does New York. And the documentary is well worth watching. It's also on, I think, iTunes too. I felt like the documentarians probably, the problem is their subject is so much more making such a bigger statement and such a more powerful thing than the ability to sort of cover it. And how do you cover this thing when you decide to do it after the fact? And it was sort of a weird way that it was sort of put together, but the subject is absolutely fascinating. And what it was is last year, Banksy took up a residency, a self-proclaimed residency in New York. And every day for 30 days, he would create some new piece of art, some new art installation, sometimes legally, sometimes not, around the city. And it might be, as there's an image we just saw, which was a pile of rubble that looked kind of like a sphinx or a skull. It might be a little tiny illustration on a wall somewhere or whatever. And it was a really, really awesome thing. Like, where will he show up next? What will happen next? Some things were small, some things were big, where he had the back of a truck was filled with what looked like the serene waterfall type scene. He had another truck that had all these stuffed animals poking through the wooden slats of the boards that were like moving and crying and all that as you drove around like the meatpacking district. and he did a very, very, thought-provoking one, which was this scene of this It was in an alley, looked like an alley, and it was these militarized looking war horses trampoline, and then there was a soundtrack playing when there was in the Iraq, I think it was Iraq, where the incident where they shot several people who were non-combatants, whatever, and you listen to the soundtrack of the soldiers they play over, and it's a thing that makes you stop and think about, you know, when we're militarily engaged and stuff. And he may have, you know, he has a point of view on stuff that it, but it's very well presented. So, but what's curious to me was, like, at one point they did a thing at Central Park, and they had a guy there who had, this was the installation, was he actually had an old man that had about 20 or 30 original Banksy drawings or paintings or stencils. And they were selling them for $60 a piece. They sold like 6 or 7 of them. They only sold, you know, that's how many they sold. So the total net they made for that day was like $420. Each one of those was worth $250,000.
That's crazy.
I'm a guy, I've walked back and forth in Santa Monica, and I've seen people selling. I've seen a guy with a booth selling Banksy's before. And I'm like, and my reaction is like, well, I think he's just stealing Banksy stuff, and I don't want to support that. Even though I'd like to have a Banksy on my wall, I won't support that. And I wondered how many people walking by there were going, maybe he's, those aren't legal Banksy's, yeah, or whatever. But for Banksy, Banksy wasn't trying to make a statement about copyright. Banksy wasn't trying to make a statement about anything. I mean, he was trying to make his own sort of statement, but it was a Banksy-esque statement. But you think about the fact that, you know, there were, you know, several millions of dollars worth of Banksy's were given away that day.
Yeah.
And that is his value. That was what mattered to him. It wasn't, he's a guy who's comfortable. He's a guy that is successful. He's a guy that has money. What he really wants to be able to do is maintain his, to pull these things off. He's got a core group of people that protect his secret. We know who he is, but we'll pretend that we don't. That protect the secret of who he is, who protect the secrecy of this moment, because they're loyal to him, because he's very true to what he is. And if Banksy started doing, you know, if Banksy were a different kind of artist and he started doing Coca-Cola labels or Reeboks or something like that,
yeah,
he would lose that currency. For him, yeah, that currency is what matters. And that's a very important thing to think about, is that he's not trying to become a billion-dollar artist. He's not trying to do this. He's trying to create work that really gets people to think and continues to get that kind of authenticity that it has. Regardless of that, the New York art blogs didn't, our New York art scene didn't want to cover him. You know, they think he's lowbrow or whatever. They were too above it. And it didn't get the kind of blow up that it should have, because whatever. But it's still a thing to think about. What is your goal? You know, one, you know, at some point, yes, paying your bills should be a goal. But then you want to have a larger goal beyond that. And, you know, we know of an artist in our industry whose goal is to reach a billion-dollar level and who's approaching that, but lives a life that none of us would want to live, you know, and his life, it, once he passes that goal, won't be that different than when he passed 100 million and really even 10 million.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Love three commas.
King of the commas. Put that on his gravestone.
Well, oh, and you look at that too. Like right now, what's happened to Jay-Z, you know, with Tidal.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Jay-Z,
I don't know what happened.
Well, Jay-Z with Tidal is, you know, trying to create, you know, Jay-Z, he wants, you know, he wants to become a billion-dollar rap artist or billion-dollar producer, billion-dollar from doing that, which is fine. And what part of the goal of Tidal is, he's trying to set this music subscription service up to be that kind of thing. But it just rubbed a lot of people the wrong way when you watch a bunch of multimillionaires on stage talking about, you know, acting like, you know, they're fighting for the rights to, you know, like they're independent starving artists and stuff. And I'm sure they have grievances with their record companies and stuff. And many of them are genuine and stuff. But when you're watching people who fly around on Lear jets and private jets and stuff talking about this is taking back music, it's like, I can't quite relate. And he's, yeah, been getting heat from that because, you know, he wants to flip this into a bigger company that then, you know.
Well, because that's about the music, especially in hip hop, that, you know, once Dre became the first billion-dollar rap star with the Beats acquisition. That now, I mean, and listen, it makes sense. Jay-Z's a good person to get into that, and I do think that there is an argument to be made about, you know, what is a more sustainable model for artists with streaming stuff. But yeah, holy moly! I mean, the only thing you ever want to hear about when you have that amount of artists up on stage talking about your product is, here's where you can get the exclusive stuff that I'm only going to give to the people that are on this service because that's the relationship we have with them is we like their work and we want their work. And here is a better, quicker, faster, more original, exclusive way that I can get their work. Not so much, you know, Kanye West, sympathetic, though he is, doe-eyed Kanye West saying, you know, finally, I'm going to get a fair shake and make some money. You know, it's not maybe the best optics.
It was, I think it was Noel Gallagher had the best comment, though. He says, what do they think they are, the effing Avengers? But again, it's been, I think that, you know, we need disruption. And I want him to succeed, you know, but it comes across as like, on one hand, you have an artist like Banksy who's like, you know, is doing such a thing that he's willing to throw away so much value just because that's what the value is for him.
Well, because he realized that in throwing away, like, let's say he sets fire to a $2 million, you know, opportunity, he knows that what he's really doing is buying $2 million of credit among his hardcore fans for having done it.
And it's hard and it's weird because, like, you know, we use terms and money to quantify those things. But as you know, you've talked about before, you know, when you reach a certain income level, like the $70,000 sort of level, money becomes less of an incentive. And when you're a successful artist that says, all right, I put away enough, I know that I'm never going to have to worry about, you know, feeding my kids or college or whatever, and I'll be able to eat where I want, do what I want. Then, yeah, it's not about, it's, yeah, it's about, you know, there are
diminishing returns from that point forward.
Yeah. We know people.
And this is like, it's, I guess, I think probably the overarching thing that we're trying to get to is, it isn't always about money once you get to sustainability, right? Like there are goals beyond that that I think the default is always, well, just make as much money as you can, which of course, hey, listen, man, if that's you, then do you. You know, if that's where you are, then that's what you need to do. But, you know, there are other ways to do it. And there are other ways that you can live very comfortably and you know, still provide for every other element that you would in generally want to provide for while still fulfilling something that might be more suited for your personality.
And I know people like in using magic. I know people who've gone into like marketing magic products and stuff who have, let's say, violated probably what are copyrights, but have more money to get away with it than other people do, mm-hmm. Than the people they're violating or whatever, who don't go to magic, don't go to certain places because they are going to be unwelcomed, because they're going to be unwelcome. And I know of comedians who are, you know, you watch them on HBO or whatever, they're successful in that ground, they don't get to hang out with everybody else, not because they're successful, because of the way they got there, and there's a price that was paid, because it was like, yeah, you know, you took this from this person, you used this joke, so you were completely a jerk to these other people, nobody likes you, the people you wanted to get the respect from don't want to talk to you.
Yep.
And that is...
Don't be that guy.
Don't be that guy.
I mean, unless that's what you want to be, in which case, who are we to tell you?
Be more of that guy. Yeah, be the best version of that guy
that can be bought. Bead.
Absolutely, man. That was a good one. I think it's been after.
I think you're right. I think you said it. It has been after.
I think it's actually been after.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.